As our day begins, Father, we invite you into our lives. Today, particularly, we invite you into our thoughts and feelings. Normally, we would go through the day in a private monologue of thinking about all the things in our lives from a survival perspective. But when we realize that you dwell inside us, it changes the way we relate to you, in that you are not just relegated to a pious corner on Sundays or prayer time. Our connection to you becomes a 24/7 conversation in unceasing prayer. In this way, Father, we lift our thoughts and feelings by choosing how we will fill our brains and begin to discipline our thinking. It doesn't help anyone to think thoughts that only make us feel more disempowered. When we realize that you don't want us to be victims, but you give us challenges as steps to climb up to a more peaceful place and gives us true freedom. That freedom starts by disciplining our own thoughts to be made new by the attitude of our own minds. For the Spirit God gave us does not make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-discipline. That's from Jeremiah.
Perfect.
We are grateful for all the blessings you bestow upon us. We are grateful to be here and able to experience the gift of another day. May our thoughts be worthy of a 24/7 conversation with you in unceasing prayer. From Philippians, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. We trust in you with an open heart. In Jesus' name, amen.
Hello, my name is Eric Dover. I'm with the Oregon Statewide Journal Assembly. And want to have a little discussion here, an interview in regards to COVID that we've been dealing with for the past, definitely the past 3 years. And want to get people up to date with what we're finding currently, what's going on in regards to the virus itself, in regards to the COVID shots that are called vaccines for some reason. Anyways, a little bit about myself. I'm a medical doctor. I did a three-year program at University of California, Riverside in biomedical sciences. Then I went to medical school at UCLA. And in addition, I did 3 years of cancer immunology research. And then I did my internship and residency at an awesome hospital, Harbor UCLA County Hospital, down what they call the Harbor District of Los Angeles. Anyways, at this point, about 10 months ago, I started putting together COVID information. And the reason why that pursuit occurred was because there's a woman in our group, and she has been affected by this severely. Her name is Tina Tressel. And she was a special ed teacher at the Sweet Home School District for their schools. And because she was bright enough and had enough foresight and read enough of what concerns might be associated with these shots, she refused to take the shot. They tried to keyhole her into signing an exemption, either for religion or for medical reasons, you know, past problems, etc. But she refused to do so. And I think she rightfully did so. I think that she should have refused. You don't bow to these tyrants. If she doesn't want to take the shot, she doesn't have to take the shot. And as we know at this point in time, the virus killed few, if any, and it was probably most likely influenza, because for some reason, influenza disappeared during the time that COVID was, quote, actively killing people. And no one died of influenza. But then we have the same number of people that usually would die from influenza dying of COVID. So when you look at the death rates from, let's say, 2019 to 2020, and then you look at compare 2020 to 2021, and the rates were basically flat. They were unchanged as far as the numbers of deaths per year. And going back and looking at averages for, you know, past 10, 15, 20 years, again, the number of deaths in 2020 and the beginning of 2021 were the same as they'd always been. The only thing that changed is when they introduced the COVID shots. That's when we started seeing increases in mortality and morbidity. And we'll talk more about that. But anyways, I started collecting this stuff for Tina Tressel, and I was initially just sending it to the Sweet Home School District. The attorney, Nancy Hungerford, that was representing the school district, a couple of assistant attorney generals that the Oregon Department of Justice had sent over for some strange reason, and some other individuals that were within the school district. That was initially. Then I received a letter, it was from the Oregon Health Authority, from the doctor there and the a woman that has a master's in public health, that sent a letter to this group saying that they would continue to give teachers and anyone that worked within the school these COVID shots. Because the person that the group that had written this letter had wanted that law taken off the books, that they would no longer be forced to take these unholy shots. Unfortunately, the Oregon Health Authority doesn't see things that way. And I don't know why that is. I've addressed it with them. I don't know if they're being paid to take this stance by the pharmaceutical companies, like they're paying lots of other people. Or if they truly believe this and just don't have the information or desire to look at the information that's available out there. So again, I've put out 20 tranches. I have put them on my own personal website, and that website will be available in the description below, but it is Dr. Dover, V like Victor, OMB, or excuse me, Dr. Dover, V like in Victor, S like in Sam, omb.weebly.com. So Dr. Dover versus Oregon Medical Board is what it stands for, .weebly.com. And my email address, if you need to get a hold of me, is eadovermd@gmail.com. Again, I've put all the indexes for the tranches up on my website, but some of the, I couldn't get the information up there because some of them were just too large. And to go back and try to redo that would be very difficult to change those PDFs. But I will say that there are the tranches for 11 and 13 through 20 are available with not only the indexes, but also the documents. And what these tranches are showing, what they're documenting, is a completely different narrative than what your federal and state government and mainstream media, which is CIA run, is feeding you. These tranches have been sent at this point in time, every single one of them have been sent to Governor Kotek, the Secretary of State Shamia Fagan, to Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, to the Oregon Health Authority, to the Oregon Department of Education, Sweet Home School District, State Treasurer Tobias Reed, and a host of others, most of which were mentioned previously. At this point, all these individuals are on notice. They've been sent the information. We know they've received it, especially Tina Kotek, because we get the return, quote, receipt, the little green card back, showing that her office has received the information we've sent her. But we know that everybody else is receiving it, too. It's going directly to their emails. So they are now on notice. And as it says at the beginning of every one of these letters that is sent to them, it says notice to the principal is notice to the agent. And notice to the agent is notice to the principal. So when someone receives this, they've got to make sure that it gets to the person that it's addressed to or any others that might be involved with this. So first, let's look into the COVID-19 origins. Now, personally, my number one concern isn't the virus. It's the fact that we've got approximately 400 biolabs in this world, 336 of which the USA Inc. and Department of Defense Inc. are funding and running in 30 countries. In fact, Sudan, as you have probably just recently read, is undergoing, I don't know if it's a civil war or a coup, or you can call it whatever you want to. But now this morning, as I've seen, the United States is quite worried because Sudan had one of those biolabs that we were running. And now it's been taken over by the rebels or whatever forces are involved with this country situation. Now, we do know at this point in time that the Wuhan lab was being funded by USA Inc. and National Institutes of Health Inc. We also, the United States and the NIH, also gave this lab the coronavirus to play with. And I know there's those who question whether the virus is real or not. And again, I don't find this to be pertinent to the discussion. And I will just assume that the virus exists, since that is commonly accepted belief out there. But the thing is that we gave them this material. We gave them this genetic material to play with. And there's a couple of reasons why I've heard that we've moved it out of our own country. Number one is it's illegal to be doing that. You're not supposed to be doing gain of function or whatever else you want to play with these viruses in your labs. The other reason is that I heard they tried to take out a patent on this, the United States, or at least Fauci or whoever was involved with it. And you can't take out a patent on a normally occurring entity out there in nature in our world. So that's another reason supposedly why they moved over to China. Who knows? The fact is that it was moved over to China. We know that, and we know Fauci was involved. And we know Fauci was involved in gain-of-function studies because that information has also come out subsequently too. They try to make it such that there was some bat soup cover-up that, you know, from the wet market with animals there next to Wuhan. But that doesn't seem to really fit with what has occurred internationally with this virus. First of all, if it occurred in just one spot, or even if it escaped from the lab, that's one single spot. A virus isn't going to spread worldwide that quickly. I don't care, even with all our international travel, et cetera. The way that it exploded on the worldwide scene is unprecedented in what I've seen in history or read historically. We do know that a Chinese whistleblower came out recently in the past year, and they said that the outbreak was intentional. And it happened, in October 2019 at the World Military Games in Wuhan. Didn't even know there were World Military Games, but I guess there are. It's basically like the Olympics for military. It was supposedly released during these military games, and this is 2 months before China notified the world about the virus. And this, in my opinion, better explains how this virus spread so quickly and worldwide as it did. It makes much more sense that it was released and that these athletes were infected and they took it back to their home countries. The interesting thing is that in 2017, a team of, quote, experts at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security published a scenario as part of a training exercise that they believe could happen in the not-so-distant future. It was called SPARS, S-P-A-R-S, instead of SARS, and the SP stands for St. Paul. It's just a fictitious virus that they supposedly made up. And what stands for is St. Paul Acute Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus, or SPARS-COV, or just SPARS. Interestingly, this analysis completely mirrors exactly what has happened from 2020 to 2023. They talk about how they're going to take the media and they're going to spread information, how they're going to take people that are celebrities or these people that are social influencers, like on TikTok and whatnot, and they're going to use them to spread disinformation and to get you to take things like a shot that you shouldn't be taking in the first place. And that's exactly what they did. So that was from 2017. But then in 2019, November 6th of 2019, just a couple of months before we realized that there was this coronavirus that supposedly was spreading out there, Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security held something called Event 201. And many of you have probably heard of this. Certainly, I know that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been speaking to this extensively. But anyways, it was an exercise based on a fast-spreading coronavirus that would have a devastating effect on the public internationally. And it was done in conjunction with the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Surprise, surprise. And then 2 months later, we had this COVID scare / plandemic. Now, the initial response obviously was fear by the public. You know, we don't know what's going on. We're seeing these videos of these people in China. They're, you know, supposedly just dropping dead in the street. Although to me, it looked like it was fake. I mean, you know, if you fall down, you're not going to be able to catch yourself. You're going to hit your head the way these people were, you know, supposedly just passing out. And they did. They caught themselves. So I think that those videos were made up. Maybe they weren't. But otherwise, different countries had different responses. And one country in particular, Sweden, they didn't do anything at all. And as it's turned out, they had a better outcome than any country that had any semblance of any lockdown or any type of masking or distancing or the COVID shot requirements. And what's really funny is that the only businesses in the United, and here in the United States, you know, we went right away, at least most states, except for some place like South Dakota. They didn't. That governor, you know, she's a bright cookie. She doesn't get enough, as far as I'm concerned, news being noted about what she's done, her accomplishments and the outcome of what occurred in her state. But here we went directly to lockdowns, masking, distancing, and ultimately the COVID shot requirements, especially here in Oregon. That was really pushed here in Oregon to the point where people lost their jobs, like Tina Tressel. And she's not the only one. So in Oregon, the only businesses that were allowed to stay open were the essential businesses like liquor stores and pot stores, along with big box stores like Home Depot, who had an incredible busyness during COVID because everybody was at home and people were doing home projects, and then grocery stores. So the masking and distancing were instituted based on no research whatsoever. But we do have research. We know that the typical hospital masks, including the N95s, do nothing to stop viruses from going either direction, either outward from your breathing or bringing them in. These masks are unable to impede viruses whatsoever. And the comparison that I use is that these masks are no better at keeping out viruses than a cyclone fence is in keeping out mosquitoes. And that's a very appropriate analogy, because that's basically what it boils down to. I mean, viruses are small. And for people to think that wearing a mask or having a shield, or now they have all these, these plastic barriers at grocery stores, et cetera, in front of the cashiers, they do nothing. Viruses, I mean, you see what happens to dust once it gets in the air. I mean, just with wind currents and people moving around, it floats and moves all over the place. Now take a virus, which is, I don't know exactly how much smaller it is than a dust particle, but it's got to be at least 1/100th the size of a dust particle, if not 1/1000th. So to think that any type of barrier is going to block these viruses is just foolish. It's a false sense of security is what I would call it. Unfortunately, this information that was available out there and that was made available to Oregon politicians, they didn't care. They just decided to go ahead and implement a totalitarian solution to a non-problem. So here we've had this instituted, and what have been the repercussions of the way that Oregon and many other places responded to COVID? First of all, the schools were closed. Remote learning was instituted. And as a result, many students' grades dropped. And some did better because, you know, it was a better environment for them. Some kids do better in a homeschooling, I hate to say isolated, but, you know, a more restricted environment where there isn't a lot of distractions from other kids, et cetera. So that was positive for them. But even these kids didn't do well because socially, mentally, and physically, these kids suffered because they were separated from their peers. I couldn't imagine having been in grade school or high school and not being able to see my friends. I spent 3 weeks with pneumonia in high school when I was a freshman at home, and I was going nuts. I couldn't wait to get back to school. And it wasn't so much, I enjoyed learning, but it was more just, I needed that social interaction. We all do. So what we saw, as I said, was socially, mentally, and physically kids suffering. And one perfect example of this is that in April of 2020, about a month or so after this COVID outbreak supposedly was occurring in the United States, John Muir Hospital in Walnut Creek, California, put out a paper saying that they had had more visits in April to their emergency room for depression and suicide attempts than they had had the entire year previously. That's the kind of impact that social isolation has on people. Obviously, job and business losses were horrific. People lost their jobs. Their businesses were closed down because they weren't essential. Maybe they should have turned them into pot shops or something. And I got nothing against marijuana. I'm just saying that I think it's awfully telling that the government keeps the liquor stores and the pot stores open because that's where they make taxes at. That's the reason why they kept them open. Not because they're essential, but because they can continue to get money inflowing into their coffers. Patients suffered. All of us suffered because we were not able to see a physician in person. There was telemedicine going on. And unless you were, quote, a COVID patient, they didn't want you in the hospitals. They didn't want you in the clinics. So a lot of people have suffered as a result of that. A lot of people died in addition because of their heart problems, lung problems, cancer problems, et cetera. Also, what was really horrific was the inability of folks to see and support their loved ones in hospitals and nursing homes. So many people died alone. It's devastatingly sad to me that people in their last days of life are not able to have contact with the ones that they love and the people that love them so much. There was increased substance abuse during this time period. There was increased domestic violence during this time period. And there was families that were severely fractured by economic and woes and COVID politics. Now, as far as medical care, that's been a problem for decades now. And as time has gone on, it's become more and more totalitarian at all levels within the medical industrial complex. I blame physicians for a lot of this. A lot of them are complicit in regards to why this has occurred. I know that they're destroying doctors left and right at medical boards. The most recent instance being doctors that don't agree with the COVID shots or that have a different take on COVID and how to approach it. Those doctors, they lost their licenses and they're trying to get them back. But these medical boards, they have complete control, especially in conjunction with their nonprofit group, the Federation of State Medical Boards, who basically oversees everything. They're the ones that give out the marching orders to the medical boards. They, as I said, they're a nonprofit. They're a 501c6, which means they can take in anonymous donations of any amount. They don't have to list, obviously, the name because they're anonymous. They don't have to list the address of where these came from. And they can take this money and they lobby with it. What they say is they're lobbying for medical boards. They're not lobbying for medical boards. They are the medical boards. What they're lobbying for is pharmaceutical companies and the medical industrial complex. And that's quite clear from what occurred, I don't know, about 20 years ago, maybe a bit less. I don't have the date right here in my head. But the Federation of State Medical Boards took money from Purdue Pharmaceuticals, who were the ones that were producing OxyContin. And Purdue wanted them to produce a book that outlined the benefits of opiates. And that's exactly what the Federation did. They hired a doctor who wrote the book, and then it was passed out by all the medical boards. Well, that didn't work out so well because, at least not to some degree, because I don't know who reported it, but the Senate Finance Committee started taking a look at them and started asking them questions. And, it didn't look so good. Although we don't know exactly what occurred because you got criminals like Ron Wyden and Senator Grassley that sealed all the hearing minutes. Everything that occurred in those hearings has been sealed. And Ron Wyden is not your friend. Ron Wyden is a criminal. He doesn't even live in Oregon. He lives in New York. Yet the low IQ sheeple in Oregon keep voting for him. It makes no sense at all. He's running again. And I'm sure he'll win again because you got low IQ people with incredibly liberal views that make no sense for the rest of us that keep voting this idiot in. Otherwise, there was no debate allowed in regards to COVID. As I said, either the physicians either personally believed this propaganda and enforced it, or they were so frightened of losing their licensing income that they followed the government-enforced narrative and the edicts to survive. Do I blame them? Yeah, I do. I don't think that that's the way you approach life out of fear. I understand you have a job. I understand you have a family. I understand you have a car payment, mortgage, etc. But this is not the way that you win a war of how you're being run over by a totalitarian group of people. You got to stand up. And I'll be honest with you. Doctors are a weak group of people. They're mentally, physically, and psychologically weak. And I make no apologies for that, because I mean, since 1978, I've been dealing with pre-meds, students. And then since 1981, I've been dealing with medical students. And after that, obviously doctors. And I will say, they are the weakest group as far as a profession that I've ever met in my life. No alternative treatments were allowed to be discussed, considered, offered, or allowed by the medical industrial complex, and certainly not by the Oregon government or the Oregon Medical Board. Instead, these treatments were and still are denigrated, although we now know that things such as ivermectin actually were working. Ivermectin is a great drug. It was known. It had been around for a long time. We knew that it worked. It wasn't just for horses. You know, horses, cattle, whatever, they're mammals. So are we. We're not that much different. And it was working for them, and it's worked for us in the past, for viruses, for bacteria, for parasites. It's an incredible drug. As I said, physicians, that spoke out, their licenses were revoked. And a couple of examples of this, one is a Dr. Scott Jensen. He's a medical doctor, and he's out of Minnesota. He actually ran for the state Senate as a Republican. They revoked him. The medical board in Minnesota came after him, and all I can suspect is that it was some sort of payback. Then in Oregon, one example is Dr. Steve LaTulip. He, again, is a medical doctor, and Oregon Medical Board came after him because he didn't require people to wear masks in his office, and he wasn't pushing the COVID shots, and he was pushing things like hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, and ivermectin. So the medical boards and the Federation of State Medical Boards are destroying great physicians with open questioning minds while protecting terrible physicians. And I have numerous examples of the atrocious and criminal. Who have been protected by medical boards in the past, in particular the ones in Oregon. And you can see many of those on my website at drdovervsomb.weebly.com. Also, hospitals became a death sentence for COVID patients. First of all, as I said previously, they couldn't see their family members. But then they were put on drugs and ventilators. They basically were killed. And actually, that was advantageous for the hospitals. They got another $13,000 if that patient died. They got more money for a COVID patient than they would get for a routine patient. And if that patient went on a ventilator, they got more, which, that makes sense because they're on a ventilator. But did they need to be on that ventilator? Should they have been on that ventilator? Or were they put on it purposefully at the request of administration within the hospital to be doing that? And I believe the latter after knowing how hospitals operate, especially in Oregon. I saw Salem Hospital three times in regards to newborn babies, where the wrong babies were brought to the wrong mothers. And then another time where the mothers had pump milk and they pulled it out of the refrigerator and they gave it to the wrong babies. Another time, Salem Hospital had a woman that worked in the newborn ward. They were slow, so they rotated her down to pediatrics, where she was exposed to a little boy with respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. She got sick, and then they denied that she ever went down there, let alone that there was a little boy that had been tested and came back positive for RSV. She wasn't my patient, but she happened to come in one day when I was on call for urgent care and for the weekend for the hospital. And she told me her story. I went to the lab the next day, asked them, for the lab test. They gave it to me. I gave it to her. She gave it to her lawyer, and she won her workman's comp case. It's pretty sad. Otherwise, there's been all this discussion about hospitals being overwhelmed with COVID patients. Turns out it's nonsense. First of all, when you look at the ICUs at hospitals, they're typically 85 to 90% filled. There's only about 10 to maybe 15% vacancy at an ICU. And that's the way they want it. I mean, that's the way it has to be, really. I mean, those are expensive units to run. And you can't have, you know, a couple of people in a unit that holds 10. It just isn't gonna pay for itself. I'm not saying they throw people typically in there for no reason. In my experience, it's always been for a good reason. But with this COVID situation, that really changed things altogether. And as far as the hospital billing, as I said, the hospitals were making a lot of money off of COVID. And the average cost of hospital care for a COVID-19 patient was around $51,000. And for patients between 21 and 40 years old that were in the hospital with COVID, it was about $78,500. And that was for people around 40, the average cost for someone that was between 21 and 40 years of age was about $51,000. For someone that was between the ages of 41 and 60, the average cost was about $78,500. And as a result of COVID, we still have telemedicine, although it doesn't seem to be quite as what, you know, as extensive as it used to be. Now, as far as the mRNA shots, there's been no human testing. Well, there is human testing now. It's ongoing. But prior to the shot being given to folks, there have been no human testing. There had been some studies done, one of which was done at the University of Texas, and it involved ferrets, if I'm not mistaken. But after they gave them the shots, almost 100% of them died over the next few months. It was disastrous, but you've never been told that. You've never seen the media mention that. I've never seen the media mention that. And what's interesting about these shots is that when they inject you, they're injecting you with 40 trillion mRNA fragments in each shot. Now, the average human has 30 trillion cells in their body. So what they've given you in those shots is enough mRNA fragments for every single one of your cells in your body. And a just released Swedish study found that the mRNA in Pfizer's shot goes into the liver and is converted to DNA. And this new DNA is then being inserted into the liver chromosomes and probably chromosomes all throughout your body, which is resulting in chronic production of T spike proteins. And this is felt to be, you know, to be resulting in autoimmune disorders. What they're doing is genetic engineering, plain and simple. In fact, what they're finding is that with these shots, these COVID shots, they've looked at them, you know, and they found that there's not only RNA, but there's DNA that's left behind, either purposefully or they weren't able to remove it all. And it's about, I don't know, 1,000 mRNA fragments to every DNA. But supposedly, this DNA in the shot helps protect the RNA and actually deliver it to the cells. We have no idea what the other ingredients are in the shot. As I said, this is an experimental shot. It had never been tested on human beings before. It's experimental, and we don't even know what the ingredients are. I remember the first time I saw a video where someone took the COVID shot. You know, it comes in a little box, and they, you know, usually with any of these medications or shots that you get, it comes with a little insert, a piece of paper you open up, and it's got all the, you know, the information about it and all the bad stuff it can do for you, et cetera. Well, with the COVID shots, I saw one open up, and it was blank, both sides. And that's the way they all were blank. So you have no idea about anything that you're putting into your body when you're taking those COVID shots. We do know that there's, you know, as I said, there's DNA in there, but there's also other contaminants. They found, graphene oxide. And now we know that's for certain. I mean, it's come out now that after looking at multiple specimens that there's graphene oxide. And the way that they know is they see these flat sheets and these tubules. And what they do is they send it through some testing, like a mass spectrometer. And what they found is it's graphene oxide. You know, it's pretty easy to do. I mean, mass spectrometers have been, infrared readers, et cetera. I mean, those have been around since I was, a teenager in college and before that. So the other thing that they were finding in these shots were, and again, squid-like entities. I haven't seen too much more about that. That was a one-time thing that I saw. And whether they're there or not, I don't know. But the other thing that they have found is squalene. Now, squalene is a compound that's very, very inflammatory to your system. So what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to draw in the inflammatory response and give you a greater response. But squalene is also known to cause some pretty significant problems within the human body. The other thing that's come out is that the Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and their connections with the Department of Defense. There's a whistleblower who says that the Department of Defense is actually the one that's manufacturing the mRNA shots, and that these companies are just slapping their label on the vial. Makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know how these companies got everything together so quickly, unless number one, they already had it in the cooker, they already had it in the works, or the Department of Justice already had it in the works. And I got a feeling it was more likely the latter. And I do believe that probably these pharmaceutical companies probably did work with the Department of Defense and did, spread the Department of Defense shots. The interesting thing is that the government and media fomented so much hatred towards those who decided not to take the COVID shot. I mean, they made us out to be bad people to the point where there's individuals out there. And I mean, these are high profile people that said we should be arrested and put in jail, that we shouldn't be allowed to see a doctor, that we shouldn't be allowed to go to a grocery store and shop for food for ourselves and our family. Well, I got something to tell those people. I didn't take the shot. I'm more likely going to be around longer than you will be. Number one. Number two is you're not going to keep me from getting food for my family ever. I don't know. I don't care what you got out there. You're never going to keep me from being able to get what I need, that I have a right to, and that you're trying to keep me from getting to. Not going to happen. And this is how hard up our government was. I mean, in Oregon, they had to resort to bribery to get the populace to take the shots. They offered them a free donut every day for a year, put you into a lottery so you can win $1 million. You get doobies, for, taking the shot, et cetera. It's just ridiculous. I've never, ever seen that kind of situation previously with any type of real vaccine, not these false ones. And I have market concerns with the vaccines we already had, just like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has. We've just seen where in the 60s and 70s, autism was 4 per 100,000 in our population. In 2020, the CDC just released a report detailing the numbers in 2020, and it is now 1 in 36 kids that are 8 years old have autism. That's, you can't tell me that's because they're doing a better job, discovering who does have autism and who doesn't. I mean, there's something behind that. And for the authorities just to use that as an excuse, that's pretty sad and very detrimental to the population. Now, the interesting thing is that AIDS is involved with this, this COVID virus. As soon as the virus was known to be out there in the population, a couple of Indian scientists from India got a hold of some specimens, and they started looking at it. And what they found was that there was, initially it was 4 HIV legs. Now they're saying 3 HIV legs. They have different functions, these HIV legs. But the most important thing that they found was something called a P shuttle protein. The P shuttle protein, if you're going to be playing with viruses and adding something like these HIV legs, you've got to have something, I guess it's, I'd have to look into it further, but something kind of like glue. It's the thing that keeps everything together. It enables them to attach, like in this instance, the HIV legs to this coronavirus. That's concerning. It concerned me from the very get-go when I heard about that. And it made me wonder, what exactly are they really, really playing with? And then we start seeing things like people that are getting the shots in Australia, they're testing positive for HIV after the COVID shots. Or as the US military, Department of Defense statistics show, is that there's been a 500% increase in HIV cases in the military. I know they started including LGBT people, but that does not account for a 500% increase in AIDS. That's unheard of. So I think we'll leave it at that. I'll come back later with, we'll go ahead and end here. And as I said, I'll be back for a second video that'll go into more detail of what we've been dealing with and what's happened to the population, what they're finding as far as actuaries for health insurance and for medical insurance, what the mortuaries are finding, et cetera. So God bless you all, and have a good day. Take care.
They do not want to let go of this. They do not intend on losing here. And we do not intend giving it back to them.
And then the bullets started flying. Then he jumps out of the car. He's got both his hands up.
And he got out of the car, and he had his hands in the air. He's like, just shoot me then. This is what you want, to shoot me. And they did. They shot him dead. With his hands in the air, and I saw it. I swear to God. He was just walking with his hands in the air. And they shot him. And they shot him dead, and then after he was down on the ground, shot him three more times.